Importing nurses, nursing home surveys, the emotional toll of nursing care, and we're going to take a look at the anatomy of abdominal pain. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week, especially all of our brand new listeners. You know, if you are a brand new listener to The Nursing Show, make sure you take the time to check out the website for The Nursing Show. You'll find it over at nursingshow.com, pretty simple, and you'll find links to everything we discuss in the episodes in the show notes category there under Nursing Podcasts. You'll also find other articles posted up throughout the course of the week on news items, research studies, and other things of interest for nurses, nursing students, nurse educators, and others, all available for you for free over at The Nursing Show site. You can also find out how to get The Nursing Show subscribed and delivered for free via an MP3 player or something like iTunes. You can also sign up for The Nursing Show newsletter, where you'll get the email sent to you every week to click on a link and listen to the show, follow up on the links directly in your email box as well, all over at nursingshow.com. Of course, for all of you long-term listeners and contributors to the show, it's always great to hear from you, and all of the contributions got a lot of different emails this week from many of the listeners, and it's always good to hear from you, the Nursing Show listeners. If you have something you'd like to say, if you have a comment on an article we've discussed recently, perhaps a correction that you think I need to make, I welcome all of that, and you can reach me here by sending those comments in by email, comments@nursingshow.com, a great way to catch up with me. And I will return your email. I get back to everybody that sends an email in here, so don't hesitate to send in a comment or just let me know how you like the show. It's always good to hear from you, and it encourages me to keep on plugging along here. Of course, The Nursing Show is a free resource here available for you, and I plan on keeping it that way, but you need to also help me out by supporting our sponsors. So if you see something that's of interest to you, check out the links in the show notes or on the website, or follow through with our sponsors for our special episode sponsors. It's a great way to support The Nursing Show. Kind of move into this week's news items, and I'm going to lead off the news this week with an article I picked up over at news-medical.net, and this particular news item looks at lawmakers that are considering here in the U.S. having a bill presented that would allow 20,000 additional nurses to enter the U.S. from other countries each year for the next 3 years as a temporary measure to fill in the perceived gap in the nursing in the nursing care realm. And this is something that has been met with some skepticism, both from the White House and from some of the nursing unions. They think the focus should be better spent on getting more domestic nursing training engaged, encouraging people to become nurses, providing the financial resources to help them become nurses, and to help bolster our nurse educators by encouraging more nurses to become nurse educators. All of these things are important measures as well. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this particular bill moves forward. I know that there are many countries out there that are not going to be happy if this bill is passed, just simply because it's going to draw their stretched nursing resources away from their country and into the U.S. in some cases, in areas that are really already have healthcare resources stretched to the limit. If you have a lot of your primary care in some of these countries being performed by nurses, and your nurse suddenly gets an opportunity to leave the country and come and immigrate to the United States to work here, there's a fear that this will drain nursing resources from other areas, qualified registered nurses from other countries. And I'm curious to see what you think. I know that there are foreign nurses in many of our communities that have been here for some length of time. Perhaps they are naturalized citizens that are, you know, still retain their accents from their roots, and they may be perceived as foreign nurses even though they're U.S. citizens. But what's your perception of the foreign workforce in the nursing realm? What do you think of nurses coming from other countries? Is there enough standardized educational resources for nurses in other countries where they would be able to meet the demands put upon them here by the standardized testing here in the United States in order for them to be RNs here? And I'm curious to see what your thoughts are about that. So don't hesitate, jump on the email right now and send me an email to comments@nursingshow.com, and let me know what you think on this. Or you can leave, actually go over and leave a comment directly on the Nursing Show site in the show notes for this episode, and let the other readers and listeners of the show see what you have comments about. Now, there has been some discussion of the fact that the recession, the current economic downturn, that maybe is leveled out. We're not quite sure yet. But that has held on to some of the nursing staff that was expected to leave and brought other nurses back into the workforce, so that we have kind of leveled off the need for nurses for a little while. But there's also the broad expectation among experts that that trend is going to continue only for a short period of time, that in fact that the nursing shortage will continue to grow as expected. This is merely a momentary blip on the numbers graph, just simply because of the economic outlook. Nurses that were planning to retire decided not to retire. Nurses that were retired or were working part-time or had just left the workforce came back because a spouse lost a job or something similar. And so it's interesting to see exactly how that works out. But I think that we are expecting to see some shortage of nurses to continue for some time, and there's going to need to be something done to solve this problem. So do we focus on education here at home, or do we import nurses from other locations? And I think that that's what this bill is proposing here. Let's move on to our next item in the news. And this next story actually looks at new Medicare nursing home surveys guidance. So there are people out there, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, has guidance for their nursing home surveyors to go out and look at different areas of nursing home care, focusing on improving the residents' quality of life and the environment of the nursing home. Now, this began on June 12, 2009. The new nursing home surveys are going to be looking more focused at residents' rights in areas such as looking at how they are able to live in the nursing home with some level of dignity, offering various choices in the way they are cared for and services that are provided for them. Also, looking for ways in which the environment can be adjusted for their particular needs or wants, and also to create somewhat of a more home-like environment in some of these nursing homes. You know, many older nursing homes just look like hospital rooms, and how can we make that more home-like? How can we give these patients a sense that this is their room, their home, if they're going to be there for an extended stay? And also to adjust the way that their visitors can come to visit them. If it's going to be their home, they should be able to have visitors come visit them in a more flexible scheduling, or in a manner that allows them some privacy and flexibility. So this is going to be something that works out. Now, the article I looked at over at Medical News Today cites that there are, at any given time, about 1.5 million individuals in the United States living in a nursing home at any given time. About 3 million people each year will live at least some time in a nursing home. So these revisions in the way that they approach the surveys of nursing homes and encourage nursing homes to increase the ways they provide services, the ways that they support a patient's dignity, are going to fall heavily on the nurses and the associated nursing staff, whether it's our CNAs, LPNs in the nursing arena, the RNs that are there that are so often just administering medications because that's all they have time for. You're going to have to really focus on nursing care to make a lot of these things happen. And I hope that there is an associated focus in the individual nursing homes on involving the nursing staff in that care level, because it's that day-to-day nursing interventions that can so often make a difference for a patient's quality of life. and their environment in general. And a good eye towards nursing interventions, towards setting goals for patients, towards helping them to attain those goals, goes a long way to improving a patient's overall outlook for their health and for their just general well-being and sense of care. And so I hope that this is something that is carried forward. Next up, speaking about, you know, the emotional toll on patients and caregiving, what about the emotional cost of nursing? There's an article that was looked at, the School of Psychology in a recent release looked at a way of exploring a nurse's experiences with a traumatic experience involving their patients. So this is something where they might have developed some empathy for their patients and then had a patient die or some kind of other incident happen where they were dealing with the distress and problems of their patient and kind of carrying some of that burden on themselves. Now, this particular study was presented at a Festival of Postgraduate Research and at the University of Leicester, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. It's in the UK, so hopefully I pronounced it correctly. Those of you who are UK nurses listening to this, send me an email or let me know exactly how I butchered that name. But it's an important look at what we do. And we have to remember, you know, I've said this before, and I think probably many of you have heard this before. You know, we're very good at caring for other people. Many of us became nurses because that's just something we felt called to do. We like caring for people. We like to be that caregiver. And in many cases, we're pretty miserable at taking care of ourselves. We don't make good patients. We don't feel comfortable with other people worrying about us and caring for us. And of course, that puts us in a very difficult position when we're trying to care for patients and we can get emotionally involved with what's going on there. So what they're trying to look at is that the nurse, with all of the specialized abilities and everything else, when they care for patients with some kind of dementia or an age-related illness, nurses in the study tended to show some anxiety and depression as they watched that patient's case deteriorate and move towards death. They also found that nurses experience distress depending on how they are involved in the process of caring for their patients, how they are able to have to shape their interventions or are involved in high staff turnover, reduced morale in the workplace, and inability to maintain a high quality of care. All of those things affected a nurse's sense of self and increased the emotional toll on that nurse. Now, when you think about it, it's really no surprise, but you know, how often do so many of us just muddle through? You know, it's not going to get any better. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing until we just burn out. And then we leave and we try to find something somewhere else. And of course, that just increases the turnover rate and makes it harder for the other people there. And then they get discouraged and leave. And you know, this is really a management issue, but I think that it's something that we need to focus on for ourselves and seek the emotional well-being that we need and take some time for me, you know, and not just me, Jamie, the pod medic, but, you know, me, whoever you are. It's important for you to care for yourself, because if you don't, you will not be there to care for the people that you so want to care for. So just think about these things. There are resources available in many workplaces that allow you to kind of blow off some steam or talk with somebody. Maybe it's an appropriate time for you to develop some kind of a peer group where you are able to get together on a regular basis with some of the nurses in your facility and kind of hash out these issues and see if there are ways that are cost-effective to address some of these issues, just to lighten the load a little bit. You know, sometimes it can be something as simple as just having a regular appreciation event. We do Nurses Week once a year. You know, I'm of a mind that there should be a Nurses Day once a month in some facilities. If a facility knows that it's kind of experiencing issues, why can't that facility do something to recognize the nursing staff on a regular basis in some positive way to show them that, yeah, we know you're experiencing some issues. We're working on the staffing, but we wanted to let you know that we're aware that you're having some problems and dealing with a lot of stress. and we want to help you blow off that stress. You know, if you, I don't know, send them to the movies or got them tickets to a show or whatever it might be. You know, it's a lot cheaper to do that than to have to go through the process of hiring and training another nurse. And I sometimes marvel at the fact that management seems to just think that they can, you know, nurses are disposable. So often I think that happens in many facilities. And that's why some facilities keep nurses for a long time, no matter how bad it gets. And some facilities can't seem to hold on to anybody. And it comes down to just poor management style, in my estimation. So for today's tip and trick of the week, we're going to be talking about abdominal pain, and specifically this week about the anatomy of abdominal pain. There are some other areas that we could cover in abdominal pain, and we'll probably do that in another tip of the week segment, but those have to do more with getting a good history, getting good quality descriptions and locations of the pain as far as referred pain, and we'll talk about that in another tip segment. Today we're going to be talking specifically about the anatomy. What kind of pain and location would mean which organ, and what kind of severity can we associate with a given location of abdominal pain? And that can be different based upon male or female patients, adult or child age patients, and of course the back history associated with that. But we'll talk a little bit about the anatomy of the abdominal cavity and kind of review the different quadrants associated with the abdomen. Now, most often when we talk about the anatomy of the abdomen, I've most often seen it described in and separated into quadrants, four areas, upper left and right, lower left and right. And of course, we're talking about anatomical directions here. So we're upper and lower or superior and inferior compared to the rest of the body. Usually the dividing center point is the umbilicus, and that's your center location. There's also occasionally described regions where it's broken into segments of six different regions, three on each, both the left and the right. I haven't seen it that way very often, but occasionally I see it broken down that way. I think it's most simple to just keep it down to the four major quadrants, upper left, upper right, lower left, and lower right abdominal pain quadrants. So that's an important question to ask your patient, is to point to where it hurts and then to think about what's going on in that particular location for a given patient, because your assessment and your thought process when you're thinking about what's going on may be different based upon where the pain is located. There are different organs in different places, and based upon the history of whether this is a traumatic event, where are you most likely to suspect a severe bleeding internal injury as opposed to perhaps a crush injury or perhaps a problem with the digestive tract. These are things that you need to think about. So let's talk a little bit about the anatomy of the abdomen. We'll start in the upper left quadrant, and we'll work our way around clockwise. And so in the upper left quadrant, we have the stomach. Also, we have portions of the large intestine. We also have the spleen and also portions of the pancreas extend across into the left upper quadrant. So we have our typical pains might be associated with a gastrointestinal disorder. So they may be having abdominal cramping or pain associated with something they ate, with gas or distension of the stomach due to a gastroenteritis problem. They may also be experiencing pain related to a traumatic injury, and they may have pain because of a ruptured spleen. They may have bleeding into the abdominal cavity from the spleen, which is a very vascular organ. So the upper left quadrant is a location. If there's a traumatic injury, some kind of a crushing blow to that area, or perhaps a motor vehicle accident where the entire body has experienced some severe trauma, there may be some injury here as well, and it's important to pay attention to this. As we travel on around and move into the lower left quadrant, we have patients that may be experiencing some abdominal pain or some flank or back pain that refers into the abdominal cavity from the kidneys. Also, of course, you have your large and small intestines also are grouped into this area. They fill most of a lot of different parts of the different four quadrants. But in this area, you have the descending colon. And so you may have patients experiencing gastrointestinal disorders where they have perhaps pain, gas, bloating, some kind of problem in that region, and that'll cause some severe pain in some cases for these patients. Also, in female patients, don't be quick to rule out things as gas pains. They could be experiencing an ectopic pregnancy. And in a female patient, until it's been ruled out, you really need to have a strong index of suspicion in women or females of reproductive age, because this could be a problem. And unless you're very sure that they are being straightforward with you about the fact that they could not possibly be pregnant, you need to rule out the fact that they might be pregnant. And then, of course, then you have to go in and get an ultrasound to rule out the fact of whether they are having indeed an ectopic pregnancy going on. Could cause, of course, severe complications. Traveling across from the lower left quadrant to the lower right quadrant, we get into a region that has, again, your intestinal organs and the large and small intestine, including also your appendix in this region. So if the classic pain for appendicitis localizes in the lower right quadrant, and this is where they would experience rebound tenderness. Although early signs of appendicitis more often, from what I've been able to read and understand, is more often can be around the umbilicus in milder pain until later in the process where it tends to localize to the lower right side of the abdomen. Again, in females, you have another set of ovaries and fallopian tubes and another chance for an ectopic pregnancy on the lower right side. So again, you can't rule that out. And of course, flank and back pain associated with the lower left quadrant could also be kidneys. And you need to be aware that could possibly be going on as well. Moving up into the upper right quadrant, and here we have the liver. We have the gallbladder, portions of the pancreas, portions of the stomach, and there's a lot going on in the upper right quadrant. Most especially is that the major portion of the liver is in this upper quadrant. And so if you have a traumatic injury to this area, the liver is also very vascular and can experience a severe pain and could be bleeding internally as a result of a traumatic injury. Also, don't forget that there is a major ligament that bisects a portion of the liver, and in a sudden stop, such as in a severe motor vehicle accident, that is very prone to tearing at that location, and that could also be causing a problem. And of course, you have the disease processes associated with liver function, including hepatitis. So there are other things that can be going on and they're non-traumatic in nature. But it's important to use your knowledge of the abdominal anatomy to localize what could be going on based upon the location of the pain and the history of the patient's current medical issue, whether it's a disease process, a pathology going on, or perhaps there is, in fact, some kind of a traumatic injury involved. So once you have these things in place, you can then start narrowing in on the causes. I did some research into census figures, and the most recent census figures from the U.S. government for diagnosis associated with admissions to the emergency department in a hospital setting are from 2005. And when you combine all age groups, both male and female adult patients, abdominal pain is one of the most common presenting symptoms when they arrive. They are coming in because of abdominal pain. It's most common in females and then a little less common in males. But when you associate all of it together with all of the visits, it is one of the more common signs and symptoms seen in adult patients. And so it's important for us to really have a handle on what's going on with the particular organs in the abdomen. Of course, you also have the bladder, which is located low in the abdomen, both left and right quadrant. And so you can have issues associated with that. And of course, you have the reproductive organs for females associated with pregnancy, or an ectopic pregnancy in particular is a serious complication. And of course, all these things are available in the links that I have put in the show notes. So there's links to several articles on common adult and child associated abdominal pain and causes, questions to ask, signs and symptoms, different things like that. There's also a good review from the Medline Plus Medical Encyclopedia over at the National Institutes of Health, and they have a good series of articles and good pictures associated with the abdominal quadrants in both male and female patients. And the good thing about this is I think is that these are excellent resources for your patients. So if you have patients that are asking you a lot of questions about what's causing problems, what kind of organs are associated with certain kinds of pain, if they've been diagnosed with a certain problem, this is a good resource to turn to for them. And since so many hospitals have access to laptops where they can actually look at this information, this is a trusted resource. It's regularly updated. It's associated with the National Institutes of Health, and it's a good patient resource with simple information explaining common tests, common situations and causes of abdominal pain, and links to those causes. So if you go down and look at the causes section, there's appendicitis, bowel obstruction, cholecystitis, chronic constipation, dissecting abdominal, aortic aneurysm, diverticulitis, and it continues on in alphabetical order. All of those have links to more explanations on each of those disorders. So it's an opportunity for your patients to get an understanding of what's going on. And it doesn't take the place of providing them good education as a nurse or another provider, but it does give you the opportunity to give them high-quality resources for additional information that they may want to look up when they get home, or a family member might want to look up when they get home, because they're going to be asked questions from other family members. And it's always a good place to start. You'll find all those links in the show notes over at the website. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week. And make sure you head over and find the links to the news articles I covered, and also the great links I found for the abdominal pain series. It's important for you to follow up on these links. You know, I can present general medical information, and I try to do the best job I can. But so often you are looking for specific information, and I always provide links to a ton of additional resources available for you that you can really dig in to get into the meat of the item to which you are addressing. And so I will present some general information here. It's your job to apply that as it's appropriate to your own specific scope of practice or guidelines for your particular degree or your particular facility. And so I would urge you to check those resources out and see how they apply to what you need to do. You can always find all of that and more over at nursingshow.com, and you can also find the resources and the sign-up form over there to actually get the links sent directly to your email address. It's great. It's the newsletter, gets out to you once a week with The Nursing Show. There are occasionally other particular items I send out to you by email, but we don't spam you and we don't share that email address with anyone else. So you can be comfortable in understanding that we respect your privacy, and sign up for The Nursing Show newsletter. I'm going to wrap up, as I always do, with some PodSafe music. We'll be picking up a song we've probably played before here on the show. This is a song called Streetlight Flicker by a group by the name of Winter Circle. If you like what you hear, you can find a link to their particular website in the show notes, and you can let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe. And stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
the color of the street light. Flicker, flicker. Who knew who our youth was quickly slipping? Who knew who one day thought we'd be missing? Long walks and long talks about nothing but under the street light. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Who knew who our youth was quickly slipping? Who knew who one day thought we'd be missing? Long walks and long talks about nothing but under the street light. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Streetlight.